Live from Fort Bragg's backyard, this is the show that put the 110 Nation on the map. There is only one nation, the 110 Nation, and you're listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show. Covering each and every sport across the board, there is no sport too large or too little. It's time to talk the talk. Here we go. Here's the man, the founder, and your host, Mr. CJ Sports.
Okay, fans, it's the 110 Nation Sports Show, and I am Mike, and CJ got called into work again, so we're just going to go over the stories from the weekend. Hold on a second. All right. Okay, fans, we're going to have Chris Crichton on to talk a little NASCAR. It looks like if he calls in. Not as host, Craig, the regular number. Okay. All right, while we're waiting, fans, I have stories, but we'll wait and see if Craig or Chris from Thursday Night Show gets in. They're supposed to call in. I left them a message. First of all, they left me a message, and now I'm leaving them one since CJ is not here. We'll see if they can get in. I had a little issue getting in to the studio today with the phone. We'll see what happens. While we're waiting, I just want to mention that I have two invitees to my show on Friday night. One is Jimmy Wilson, the head of the Whalen Modified Tour. The other one is a driver from Stafford, waiting to hear back from both of them. I will know more tomorrow and see what happens. We'll see what happens with that. Like I said, on the spur of the moment, Chris and Craig was supposed to appear with me. They asked for a chance to appear, and now they are nowhere to be found. So I don't know what happened. Uh, Okay, give us a sec, it says. Okay, I'll give you a sec. Chris and Craig will be here. Let me just run down the stories while we're waiting. Okay, as far as the Olympics, you can get a whole Olympic wrap-up if you just scroll down and start from Thursday. And I put a lot of the winners up there on the 110 page. So you'll get an idea of the wins. Tomorrow night we have Izzo coming on. Okay. You can get the info on the Olympics if you scroll to Thursday and read all the stories up from there. You'll be able to get a good overview of what happened at the Olympics, the Winter Olympics, this weekend. As far as anything else, we'll be talking to Izzo, a lot of hockey action over the weekend and with the trade deadline. We'll save a lot of that hockey stuff for Izzo tomorrow night. CJ, again, won't be here because he has plans. So that's the deal for tomorrow night. But Izzo hopefully will be here with his hockey report with me, and we will discuss a lot of the hockey stuff that went down, the women winning gold over Canada, the men getting knocked out by Czechoslovakia in the quarterfinals. But a lot of hockey action in the NHL as well. A lot of trades to talk about because the trade deadline is tonight. And so Izzo will have all that, and we will have all that for you tomorrow. As far as the other stories, the main story to come out of the Olympics that was an off-the-ice issue, one of the Canadian women players, hockey players, did not wear their silver medal on the podium during the ceremony. And this is more or less of a symbolic gesture. I've heard of this, and I believe I've seen this in a few Olympics where they were disgusted to finish second and did not wear their medal in a symbolic gesture. And that was done by one of the women. I believe she might have been the captain of the team. We'll ask Izzo about that tomorrow. Big, big surprise in the Olympics. Also, you can read this as well. The U.S. won gold in curling, something that is unheard of. It's their first gold in the curling competition for some time. As far as baseball, two baseball stories, one general and one specific. The Major League Baseball spring training is opening around the Florida area, around the state of Florida. And ESPN did a good article, which I put up on the 110 page over the weekend, about how decisions are made during spring training. So that's up there. Also, very good article on specifically the San Francisco Giants and how two of their players this year were franchise players with other teams, associated for years with other teams, Evan Longoria and Lawrence McCutcheon. Andrew McCutcheon, I'm sorry. So they will be beginning their careers as San Francisco Giants. Of course, McCutcheon, for years, associated with the Pirates. And Longoria with the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, or the Rays, however they call themselves. They started out as the Devil Rays and became the Tampa Bay Rays. But those two players now on the in the Bay Area and starting again, I guess you could say, continuing, but starting anew with the San Francisco Giants. So a good article on by ESPN, and it's up there on the 110 page for you fans. Continuing to follow the story, and you can follow right along. I put the stories up as they appeared. Mark Cuban and the Mavericks mess in the NBA with the off-the-court issues with sexual harassment, once again, of the in the front office of the Mavericks. And you can follow that issue all the way through until somehow or other it's resolved. I put those stories up also over the weekend. On this late last week, Kawhi Leonard in the NBA hurt, injured, and usually it's the team doctor or someone on that order that's in charge of saying when an athlete is ready to come back. Okay, we have Chris Crichton in the studio. Let me get him plugged in here, and we'll talk NASCAR. There you go, Chris. Okay. Chris Crichton is talking NASCAR, and he'll have more than a NASCAR minute because we have time to fill with CJ for the studio. Chris, you there?
Yeah, Tim, for the mic stats, how you doing?
How you doing, Chris? Okay. Okay. Let me get our cohort in, as he just popped into the studio. Hold on.
Hello.
How you guys doing? Both you guys are plugged in now.
Oh my goodness. So it was an exciting, by the way, this is Craig Moore and we got Chris Creighton on the other line. We are, your host of Race Chat Live. We just want to promo our show real quick and give a shout out to Kevin Harvick and Harvick Nation for their dominating victory on Sunday. I guess Ford now can't complain that they need a new car.
I can't recall which one of us picked Harvick. Can you?
No, I picked Logano.
I picked Hamlin.
I picked Harvick.
May have been CJ Sports.
It may have been CJ.
Was it
no.
you?
Yes, it was big. Yes, it was.
I kind of figured it was by the way he said it.
Yeah. I was completely
anyway,
off from it.
But anyway, this week we've got we're not going to take up too much of your show. You want to tell them who we got this week, Chris?
Oh man, yeah. Well, first of all, shout out to Happy Harvick. You know, hell of a win. He dominated all weekend. Ford really showed that they have a good package for these type of racetracks that are coming up. I hope that it's a good sign for what Ford can bring along. You know, probably the most interesting thing riding into this week is the West Coast Swing, right?
Yeah, we're getting ready to go to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And guess who does well there? Harvick.
Yeah, well, guess who isn't doing real well?
Jimmy Johnson.
Yes. Well, for them, yes.
And I'm going to sound like a New York Yankees fan here, who two games in the season is going to say that they're not going to make the or in danger of not making the wild card. But if Hendrick Motorsports can't figure out what's the matter with Jimmy, they're in danger of not making the playoffs. Or they might make the playoffs, but they're not going to make the Final Four in Homestead.
Yeah, and first of all, Craig, let's remember that this is year number two of the struggle, not year number one. You expect them to come out of the darkness and hold the golden horseshoe once again, but I just, you know, Hendrick's lacking a lot right now. William Byron did not look good. Chase Elliott struggled with his finish. Jimmy Johnson didn't have a good race. Alex Bowman was two laps down midway through the race. That is a true sign that things are not good at Hendrick. I wouldn't sound the alarms, but I would definitely be ringing the bells and finding out what's going on. Not just with Jimmy Johnson's team in general, but the whole entire organization of Hendrick Motorsports. I could understand struggling last year after the departure of Stuart Haas, but this is a whole new season, and it seems to be right out the door. There's trouble in paradise. And it's very interesting that Jimmy Johnson is having the struggles that he's having, and at what point in time does a seven-time champion start griping and getting very agitated and irritated at the equipment, being that he's used to winning so many races? Are we about to see a side of Jimmy Johnson that we've not seen yet?
I'm going to bring up a conspiracy on Thursday night too. So fans, you guys are going to want to tune in because I don't really want to say it's a conspiracy, but I've got some thoughts on Jimmy Johnson and his possible long-term stay, shall we say, at Hendrick Motorsports. So you're definitely going to want to tune in for that in the first half hour. Second half hour of the show, we're going to have Winrig Motorsports Park promoter, one half of the dynamic duo up here in New York. Mike Perillo joining us, and he's going to talk about his season at Glenridge Motorsports Park and what they've got planned for this year, among other things. So it'll be a great hour and a half on Race Chat Live. You're going to want to tune into that on both on the 110 and on Race Chat Live on Facebook.
And we'll also dig into the Bubba hype. Was it hype? Is it going to be real? Or is Petty showing that they're a second-tier race team?
Right. So we're going to talk about all that. You're going to want to tune in for sure. And I'm sure that Mr. Stats is going to join us as well as Mr. CJ Sports. So it should be a great night of discussion.
Yep. And speaking of Hendrick, you guys see the rumor, and I didn't print anything or I didn't put anything up because it was nothing that was concrete, but there's a rumor going around that Jeff Gordon is thinking of coming back as a driver. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. I didn't, but I'd love to talk about that on Thursday. Don't print anything. I'd love to talk about that on Thursday, and then after that, maybe we could print it.
I'm going to hurt all y'all right now. He was actually talking about a return to a truck race at Martinsville. And so the likelihood of that actually coming together, it's not a return to Sprint Cup or whatever,
okay.
Monster Energy series, but it's definitely, he said that he'd like to race at Martinsville, maybe in a truck or something one last time. So, Gordon, don't know when to put the helmet up.
So, all right. Well, listen, I want to thank you for allowing me to invade your show for about 8 minutes. But I'm going to get back to...
Better you than the aliens, but that's, you know...
Well, I am from New York. I am from upstate New York, so I am part of the aliens.
That is good. All right. Thank you, Seth.
So.
Thanks, Seth. We appreciate it.
You got it. Okay, that was Rich and Craig. I don't know who left the studio. I don't know if Chris is still there or what the deal is with him. Chris, are you there? Chris? I guess Chris left as well. Or he's muted or something. But anyway... okay,
Dad, you can't have dead air time, Dad. What?
I was wondering where you went, but anyway, okay, probably had daddy duty or something. But yeah, we were talking about Harvick and Gordon. I'm surprised you saw more about that. I only saw the initial rumor, and I didn't know what was going on. And then you said it had something to do with him getting into a truck in Martinsville?
Yes, Dad. It was basically something said from the commentating booth, and he was talking with another driver. I can't pinpoint exactly. I can't remember what exactly it was. But basically the whole idea of coming out of retirement was he wanted to race a truck at Martinsville or something like that. He didn't want to come back full time. He just wanted to given an opportunity to drive a race at Martinsville. You know, Martinsville is a storied place for Jeff Gordon. He was good there through a whole bunch of years. And of course, you know, there's always going to be a connection with Hendrick and Martinsville being where that's where Hendrick's son and family were killed at tragically. So
right.
I think that, you know, Gordon has, you know, he has the want to get another obviously another one of those clocks, right, Stats?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. He's got too many rooms in his house, maybe. I don't know. I haven't seen his house. It's probably a couple of grandfather clocks short for each room, you know. Maybe he's got to put
right.
one in his bathroom or something. Who knows? But another one of those sports people that have a hard time retiring. That happens to a lot of them, I guess, regardless
yeah.
of the sport. But interesting. It's funny how different wives perceive things. Like, you don't hear, like, when Gordon stepped in for, you know, different people and, like, Junior and stuff like that. You don't hear about his wife complaining or saying no. And I don't picture, like, Junior's wife, you know, backing down on her stance, you know, that he shouldn't get back in a car. Of course, with him, it was concussion related, so that's a little bit different. Actually,
right.
a lot different. But, interesting.
Well, even Junior's getting back in a car later on this year at Richmond, so I believe it's Richmond.
Izzy, she had, she backed down a little, huh? I hadn't heard about that.
He was already scheduled to race a race in that car. It's the Xfinity car. And he's gonna race in the Xfinity in his own ride.
Okay.
At Richmond, I do believe. So we haven't seen class of Dale Earnhardt yet. And, you know, Junior's had success in the Xfinity series even after being in the Cup. So I don't necessarily know why he picked Richmond, but that may be where the wife comes in, right, Steph?
Yep, I guess so. Maybe she has family there. That race will definitely draw. They won't have to worry about fan reaction then if Junior's back in a car. So I'm sure fans will, Junior Nation will snap up those.
Oh yeah, they'll come out in droves, Stats. That's for sure. He is the most popular driver in racing, even if you can't vote for him this year.
He might win the award based on one race this year, if that's the case.
Well, that would be in the Xfinity series, not the Cup series.
Yeah, I know, but it hasn't mattered for 16 years, so why would it matter now? But, interesting. All right. So, we were going over some other sports. What did you think of the Olympics, Chris?
I think I was about like 98% of the rest of the planet and probably didn't get to watch too much of it, Stats. I really was disappointed in myself. There was a lot of hype coming up to the Olympics. And I fizzled out just beforehand, and I wonder if a lot of it had to do with NBC's coverage. You know, I've asked myself, I've always been a fan of Winter Olympics, This year, I could never, every time I was looking for certain sports that I knew, I missed it. And I know that's why you're supposed to follow Twitter, but as a full-time dad, sometimes I don't have those luxuries of being on Twitter all the time. So actually finding what I wanted to watch and when I wanted to watch it was quite difficult because basically I was looking for it on live TV.
It's not only that. I'll never understand why they did this. They did the, ABC, for example, before cable, they used to put it on tape delay, okay? And you could watch it. You watch it during your daytime hours or nighttime hours, especially if it was in a foreign country. We're not talking about the Lake Placid Olympics now. We're talking about, France or, Lillehammer when it was in Norway. You know, they used to put it on at your time, our time in the USA. I think a lot of the problem with this one, I certainly missed a lot of it because, I mean, I followed it for the 110, but through websites. The reason I didn't watch a lot of TV of it was it was on 3 o'clock in the morning from Seoul, Korea, or from Korea, rather. So who's going to sit up in the United States at 3 o'clock in the morning watching curling? Now, granted, the U.S. won a gold in curling, but nobody knew about it until the next morning. Things like that, it just, that's why. I mean, no working adult that has to work, a 9-to-5 job or something else is going to sit up till 3 o'clock in the morning watching the Winter Olympics.
So I think we can agree that the scheduling was definitely not where it was easy access to watch. And I think for the first time ever, live TV failed us, Steph. And that's kind of the drift that I felt. Because when the X Games is coming on and it's the winter event or the summer event, they have a great build-up to it. There were certain things of the Olympics that I would have loved to have watched live, but once it's already happened and I find out about it, then it's really no point in watching it, right, Stats? I mean, that's kind of, you know, that's where live TV spoils you, and with all this information, it really just kind of killed it. So even on replay, you would have to have that diehard want to sit there and watch it. And you know, I can understand bobsledding and stuff like that. Those are really, you know, speed skating and stuff. Those are some of my favorites there. But I actually caught more of the qualifiers than I did of the actual Olympics, Stats.
Right, I know. And the thing about it is, the thing that was surprising to me is when you watched NBC or NBCSN during the day, they always hyped it like, oh, it's going to be live. It's going to be live. You're not going to have to worry about it being on tape or in a delay. Yeah, but if it's live, it's 3 o'clock. You're going to have to sit up and wait, and then the live is 3 o'clock in the morning. So again, they shouldn't have made that a selling point for this particular Olympics, and they weren't mindful of where it was located. I mean, a good selling point this year would have been to say, okay, we'll put it on tape delay, and you can watch it in the United States, you know, during your day, even like 7 o'clock in the morning, like a Wimbledon or something, you know, would be acceptable. But no one is going to sit up till 3 o'clock in the morning when you have to work the next day, you know, or even on a Saturday or Sunday. You know, you don't start watching a program at 3 o'clock in the morning.
And Stats, you know, other than NFL playing in London, the game starts a little bit earlier to appease those fans. I mean, really, this is totally different. They could have scheduled the events to hit primetime TV, and that's what I'm kind of disappointed in, is they didn't – at certain times, I guess we're selfish because it's a world sports, but at the same time, highlighting the main events that Americans are most interested in seems like you would be bidding for some airtime, some primetime airtime.
Especially this year with a couple of the events where the Americans were supposed to win or were, like, for instance, okay, the curling, maybe you didn't expect the Americans to win and they won. They got a gold. But like the women's hockey team, Izzo's been talking for weeks about the, you know, women's hockey team. They end up winning a gold. The skiers, Lindsey Vonn and Schifrin, them, you know. And so those certain events should have definitely been on when the majority of Americans in the USA could watch it.
I agree totally. Just the time frame and being on the other side of the world worked against us in this Olympics, and I think that you know, we're the powerhouse, we're all cable television's created. And you would think that we would – it's NBC's an American-owned company. You would think that they would have some kind of control into how these programs, how these events were scheduled. And, you know, I guess the World Olympics Committee wins again, you know.
Right. Okay, let's run over some sports with you, if you don't mind, because we had a whole list of, like, 34 items, but we won't go into all 34. But – did you see LeBron James saying again, and I don't necessarily, you know, you don't like to see a LeBron James spouting off and talking about, usually when you talk about the officials, it's thought of as an excuse. But he was kind of complaining about the officiating of the game when they lost to the Spurs last night. Did you see that?
Yeah, well, I followed it today as well, and from my reaction of the press and the way that everybody else feels about it, you know, it goes back to the officials don't know how to officiate a LeBron James game. And I know a lot of times I pick on, say, LeBron, you know, because he likes to run from the Cleveland Cavaliers. But this time he got it right, and I promise you that the league was listening. And the officials were listening, and without no doubt,
LeBron James should be going to the free throw line at least 10 times a game. They play LeBron harder because they know that he is as talented as he is. And a lot of times the officials turn the other head, you know, turn the other cheek on it because LeBron's so good. So I see a little bit of difference in officiating probably coming to the Cavs. And, you know, this once again is LeBron's strategy. He's the best at it. And divert the attention away from the two losses that they've had. And, you know, it's all attention on me. I'm not getting my foul shots. If I was standing at the line, that would be eight to ten more points I could have. So if he goes to the line 10 times, he has a chance to most of the time make 20 points. You know, that's the difference in a ball game, Stats.
Right, exactly. Another interesting basketball story that basically two of them off the court. The first one is a mess. Mark Cuban, owner of the Mavericks, took the blame, I guess you could say, for their somebody in their front office ended up another sexual harassment story. It seems like one a week is coming out in sports between the women's gymnastics team and everything else. Now, something is always coming out in every sport now. But now the Mavericks front office, there was a person who were pretty high up in the office, ended up getting a claim filed against him. So really another mess, Chris. Also, something you don't see very often, usually it's the team doctor together with the coaches that make these decisions, but the Spurs are going to allow Kawhi Leonard to decide when he comes back and from an injury, and they were saying that there might be some issues between Leonard and the front office with the Spurs because they're saying he might not come back now for the whole season.
I remember a few years ago when Derrick Rose made the comment that he's got to protect his future and he wasn't going to play. And I don't think that worked out too well for Derrick Rose. And, Kawhi Leonard is a very talented basketball player. But you have to prove yourself on the court. And he's got a great coach at Popovich. I'm not sure what the dysfunction is. I see the Spurs in a little bit more of a tangled mess right now than and kind of like this drama series that I think we're not used to seeing from the Spurs. But I would say that San Antonio should be added to the list of potential places LeBron James may go to. And I know that a lot of people think I'm crazy, but, you know, what better way to get Kyrie Irving, I'm sorry. Say his name, Stats.
Kyrie Irving?
No, the San Antonio's.
Kawhi Leonard? Kawhi Leonard?
Yeah, Kawhi Leonard. Yes, sorry about that. What better way to get him motivated to get on the court than to bring in a LeBron James? And Popovich, I know, would love to have LeBron on his team. And if it's discipline and structure that LeBron's looking for, I think that to have a good sidekick that's young that'll carry the team even after LeBron leaves, it's almost a perfect marriage in heaven. You go to L.A. for stardom, you go to San Antonio for rings, right? Isn't that what we know?
I guess so. Of course, CJ wants him to stay in Cleveland. You know,
with Leonard, the situation with Leonard, you know, you have to want to play. He obviously has some distrust somewhere and believes that his injury is worse off than what he's being told it is. And this kind of reminds me of the Andrew Luck story. It could come down to there's something botched, and it's deeper than what we remember. We couldn't understand why Bo Jackson wasn't coming back to the baseball or wasn't going to come back on the field for the rest of the year with the Raiders. It was all – we didn't understand, but 6 or 8 months later, we all found out that Bo Jackson was never going to be the same again. And, you know, that's the risk these athletes take. And, you know, I'd hate to think that Leonard was in that situation, but we just don't know at this time, especially if he doesn't trust the medical advice that's been given to him.
Right. And also, I heard over the weekend that I was watching – one of these shows like First Take, I think with Stephen A. Smith, and he said that either an uncle or a cousin or somebody is now representing Kawhi Leonard. So you got family involved, which is not always the best situation, especially when a family member is representing you.
Do what? I'm sorry, Mike.
Yeah. No, I said, additionally to that, everything you said is true. But then also I heard on ESPN over the weekend that Kawhi Leonard has either an uncle or a cousin or someone within his family now who's his legal representative.
Wow. He may be wanting out of San Antonio. That could be the whole reason why he doesn't want to play, but at the same time, you earn your money out there on the court. But, you know, the NBA is different right now, and, you know, somebody may go out there and pay a lot of money for him. But once again, I'm reminded of Derrick Rose. When Derrick Rose, you know, maybe Derrick already knew that he was washed up before, and maybe Leonard wants a big payday in the end.
Could be. I don't know. I guess we'll find out sooner or later.
Which, I mean, you know, I would like for you to make a response on the Andrew Luck theory. It seems like Andrew Luck has the same situation going on with him.
I don't know what's going on with him. You know, I guess it's his shoulder again or some form of injury that he's had for quite a while. I mean, he hasn't really been the same quarterback now for years. I mean, I remember when he came out of Stanford, he was supposed to be their, you know, next big thing, and then he played, what, 2 seasons, and the rest of the time he's been injured. So much so that they got that backup quarterback, the black kid from the New England Patriots, Bissett or whatever his name is. That was the third string quarterback. That was the third string quarterback with New England. And he ended up starting for them, so for Indianapolis. So I really don't know what's going on with Andrew Luck.
Well, Jacoby's proved that he was not a third string quarterback, and though he struggled at first, by the end of the season he definitely was showing some improvement. But, you know, Andrew Luck was supposed to be the franchise, right?
That's what I mean. He was supposed to be, you know, for years and years and years. And maybe he played 2 years without being injured, but once he got injured, everything went downhill, you know.
So, like, I see it too, Steph. What else you got for me?
Well, what you think of John Force? Not a very good year for him. Not a very good year for the Force family so far. 2 trips to the hospital with Sean and Brittany, actually 3. And they're not having a good year.
Yeah, it wasn't. And I don't know, I didn't catch much on the NHRA. But, you know, our condolences and prayers with John Force. And was it Courtney that was in a wreck as well?
It was Brittany, I believe. Yep.
Here.
And that was in one weekend. I think that was last weekend. And then this weekend, John ends up in Arizona. So not a very good year for them so far.
Yes,
and
it,
with them,
it's starting to happen.
And with them, it's not a matter of, you know, a loss, because anybody can lose in drag racing. With them, it's like two trips to the hospital. Between Brittany and him, it's three, because he went on a Friday night, she went on a Saturday, and then I don't know what round, I think it was the second round, he blew up this weekend and ended up going to the hospital. So very, very strange year for him, for them.
Yeah, what else you got for me, Seth? I'm making my baby peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I'm trying to stay here with you.
Okay. What do you think of the college basketball mess? You following that at all? Between Bettino and now the latest one is Sean Miller and the Arizona Wildcats. What's going on? Everybody's taking money. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I don't, this is one story I'm not surprised by. I think that it's a little bit, you know, funny how it all come out. And, you know, the NCAA and the NBA just got caught with their pants down with each other.
Yep, it started with the snow, and now they're looking at everybody. That's how it starts, I guess.
And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Mississippi State was in a situation with, I believe, Cam Newton. Wasn't it $100,000 that Mississippi State was going to pay Cam Newton to go play quarterback there?
Yeah, actually, I think that was they were going to pay his father or some stuff. His father got involved in that.
Right.
You know, and that's how he ended up at Auburn. He totally went away from
right.
that, you know.
So it's nothing new. It's just somebody got caught. And, of course, you know, it's going to open up the eyes. I really feel like there's going to be a change in the way that the rules are. If an organization wants to buy a kid straight out of high school, then I guess that kid should have the right to go play basketball, baseball, or whatever sport he wants to. It's very hypocritical of the NBA to do what they do, and for like Major League Baseball, they sign 16-year-old kids out of another country, where an American ball player has to play at college to even get noticed. So there's almost a half a generation gap between the players that they can sign overseas or off the mainland versus high school students.
Right. Let's see. What else we got? Did you hear about Tiny Archibald?
No.
The guy that used to play point guard for the, starting out with the Kings, and then back when I became a sports fan, I guess, with the Kings and a couple of teams in the NBA, the Celtics. He's got an incredible found out what the NBA players Association is trying to open up their medical program to players that didn't have that luxury back in the day, and they invited all of them, and some showed up, the veterans, to check out their medical condition. And Tiny Archibald thought he was going in for a basic, just a basic physical. And, you know, he fully intended to come out, like his old self and with no problems, because he wasn't feeling ill or anything like that. And the doctors found out that he had an incurable heart disease.
Wow. That's terrible.
So,
well, how about Tiger Woods?
Tiger, I have to do a golf story when I get out of here, when I get off here, and put it up on the 110 pages on the blog site. But yeah, Tiger finished 12th and shot a 70, had his best round, from what I read, his best round since 2015. So not bad to finish 12th. For him, he didn't finish like 188th or something, but it's going to be interesting to see what he does the rest of the year.
Well, I tell you what I was surprised at the most was his drive shots one day were off, and his putting shots were off the next day. So basically, if he could have combined those 2 days together where he struggled at one or the other, he would have probably finished in the top 5 or better. And that's a big game for Tiger Woods at this point in time.
Right, definitely. Because nobody except him expects him to be, he'll never be like dominant as he was. I mean, there was actually golfers on the tour that said they feared him as far as they'd see him walk onto the course and say, okay, everybody's playing for second. That's how dominant he was for a period. But then once he got into that marital situation, and then between that and the major car accident and all the injuries, that did him in. Once Tiger Woods got more on the gossip and the people pages than the sports pages, he was done as far as being dominant.
Yeah, but we were raised with Palmer and Nicholson, and both of those golfers had great golf at older ages. I think that golf, a lot like every other sport, has become euthanized, and so the younger you are, the better you are. Whether or not it'll open the door and allow Tiger in, I'm just not really sure. But Tiger can hang with some of the best golfers in the game, but I don't know if going out and going to every tournament is the way that Tiger needs to approach this. He needs to pick certain ones to be at and really work his game. In 2 or 3 years, we may see a totally different game from Tiger Woods.
Right. It's really interesting. Like you said, Palmer and Nicholson, those guys. And then, I started following golf more in my college years when I started writing about the golf team over there. That's when I had to really, study up on the scoring and all the rest of it. But, and the major thing with them is you didn't have to, and you could say this about all sports. I'm sure Palmer and Nicholas had, skeletons in their closet, but you never heard about it because the social media wasn't dominant then. Now you hear about athletes more, you can hear more about athletes off the court or off the field than you do on. So that's a problem in and of itself for a lot of these guys.
TMZ.
Yep.
TMZ is the problem for a lot of these guys, and you're right. The landscape of media changed completely in the Tiger Woods era.
Yep.
And you watch a man who had a very private life become exposed. And on top of injury, he struggled with being in the spotlight that he had put himself in. But now I'm not condoning what he's done. But like every other athlete, once they've come clean and once they've admitted their fault, I always like to see a good comeback story. And I think the best story in golf could be a Tiger comeback.
Right. And what you said, though, is pivotal. is he put himself there. Usually if it's the lags and the gossip, you blame the writer for writing a lot of the stuff. But in Tiger's case, he put himself squarely in it. He did it to himself. No question about that. But you also have to take into account that if he loses something of his game, you got to remember, he was playing at 3 years old. His father had him playing, 18 holes at 3 years old just to get used to the game. I mean, I remember reading about Earl Woods, too, that before, he put a club in Tiger's hand and expected him to play 18 holes at the age of three. So, Tiger Woods saw a lot of golf before he even got on the tour,
Yeah, it was a way of life, basically, for Tiger.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's see.
What about
the Steeler linebacker? You see, with him, the guy that had the neck injury or the back injury, whatever it was, the spine injury, he says he's not through with football.
Ryan Shazier should stay at home stats.
Definitely. I have experience not with my spine, but with CP, and I had no choice in the matter. I was born with CP, but he should be thankful if he's able to walk again, let alone play football.
I agree 100%. There's always a sign, and that's his sign to stay at home and, think about what might have been. But that's the thing, when it comes to a football player stats, these guys are a different breed. And if he thinks he can make it back to Pro Bowl level, well, who's going to stop him,
Right. And what about the latest over the weekend, too, about the Major League Baseball players? I don't put much stock in it. I mean, it's a symbolic gesture. I know why they're doing it, but it's not a tremendous, it's not going to make the earth move, so to speak. But the all 31 Major League Baseball teams are going to, and I guess that's in a large part of it is where it's located, too, with spring training, a lot of the Florida, others being in Arizona. But all 31 teams, when the spring training games start, are going to be wearing the caps of the baseball team in Parkland, that high school that was victimized by that shooter. I forget the name of the school, the high school. I know it was in Parkland, Florida. But they're going to wear the caps of the high school baseball team for the spring training game. And like I say, it's a nice gesture. It's symbolic, but I don't see where, especially since it's in a spring training games, although it being in Florida, I guess it's a pivotal reason why they're doing it. A lot of the games in Florida anyway. But I don't know. What do you think about situations like that? I guess it's just supposed to be symbolic and a show of support, right?
Yeah, and we've seen this with Boston after the Boston Marathon tragedy. It's a great gesture. I hope that it's not politically motivated. I think that we've all had enough of that. I hope that it's just a good gesture, and I hope that Major League Baseball isn't coming out trying to make a political statement, because obviously the NFL fell face first when they allowed their players to come out and make a political statement. So what I have found over the last couple of years is there is still a group of people that want to keep politics and sports separated, because sports has its own politics. There are politics in every sport, but does it have to be the national politics? Because each and every sport carries its own politics, its own structure, and that's the drama that we seek when we go to our TV to watch sports, is the drama from the game, not the drama from the White House or from across the street or, you know, even in the symbolic situation with the ball caps. You know, is it to raise awareness? You know, what is the theme behind it? What is the statement behind it? And I think that we would be a little bit more clear if Major League Baseball was a little bit more clear of why they're wearing the hats, other than just a symbolic acknowledgement that something very horrific, very terrible happened at that school in Florida. And not to put that in any it's one of the worst tragedies ever. We send our kids to school every day, Stats, and we never expect something like that to happen. Unfortunately, obviously, something did happen. And, of course, you know, it's part of nationalism. It's part of patriotism. After 9/11, people went out and bought flags. Baseball teams, NASCAR, all saluted. The armed forces and the country dug together. If it's a sign of unity that we're there with those students and those people who lost their lives, I'm all for it. But if it's another political statement about grab the guns and all this other stuff, Stantha, I'm just not a fool for it.
Right. I don't think you're alone in that either, Chris. But it's interesting. Like I say, a lot of that all well and good if it was just a political statement. And I understand, too, I don't have any kids. I haven't been lucky enough to have any kids. But the interesting thing is, for obvious like parents like yourself, it's a little bit of a different story. Nobody wants to see their kids hurt, even if you don't have kids. But the interesting thing is, I'm just glad with what's going on in schools nowadays that I went to school when I did. The worst thing we had to think about, what's going to happen if, you know, we cut class. I mean, that was a major problem. Now kids have got to worry about getting shot if they go to school. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and we have to protect the kids. We have to protect kids, and when we are so far away from agreeing on something, unfortunately, the resulting answer is going to be that we're not protecting the kids, and we should protect the kids at whatever cost. And the further we go along and not make sure that our children are protected and have some unarguable battle with something that has been on agenda from a certain political party for quite some time now, we're not going to be able to bring solution to what happened in this tragedy. And I'm all for, I'll stand here and be persecuted. I'm all for what Trump said. There are plenty of teachers in our area that hunt, that probably have a concealed carry permit. Those teachers should be allowed to exercise their Second Amendment right. And so you got me political today. That's very unusual, Stats. Very, very unusual.
Right, right. Like you said, the kids shouldn't be scared to go to school, you know. That's crazy. My mother was a teacher for 35 years. I had to just chuckle when they were talking about, actually, some commentators said something about teachers should be allowed to carry guns so they could protect the kids. Well, if the teachers have to carry guns to protect kids, then we got a problem, you know.
we got a problem. We have a we're failing to address that problem.
I should say we got a bigger problem than even we thought of if the teachers got to carry guns.
Yeah, yeah, we have a bigger problem. And if we have to put security shacks at the front of all of our schools as if they live in a minimal security prison, we have a problem. There's a problem on both spectrums. But the truth is, we have a problem, and we've got to protect these children somehow. And arming a teacher, I don't think is that big of a deal, man. A teacher carrying a concealed weapon means that teacher doesn't have to show anybody that he has a weapon on him. To me, I'm not worried about the man carrying the weapon on his hip. I'm worried about the man that's got his weapon up underneath his shirt.
Right. Oh, definitely. And the other problem is how they get the good in the school to begin with. But we're turning this show into a little bit more political than I think we want. But, yeah, I agree with you. Talk about political. What about Patino? We touched on it before. I know you follow college basketball a little bit. Patino, Louisville used to be one of the really, really strong programs, and supposedly Patino really left it in the gutter. I mean, they fired him, but they fired him too late. I mean, he really brought that program down.
Yeah, there's so many times when you give somebody a position of power, it starts out in good intentions, and, it's the reason why we don't want politicians in office for very long, because the longer they're there, the more untouchable they feel that they are. And I think Patino is eating his own crow. There was situations where he should have been let go already. This is something that's been drawn out, and I feel like, possibly he didn't take the note to resign over the issues with the escorts in the dorm room, and so they found a way to finally put an end to him. Sometimes that's what it takes to get rid of bad people. I'm not saying that the Louisville University conducted this type of information, but at the same time, they've got to move on. They got to move on fast because their image has been taunted for sure, tainted.
Right. The last thing I have, I think one of the last things. Hold on. Let me get the list here. With the NCAA and you're talking about abuses and everything, but one of the things that I find really interesting about the Final Four and the tournament, March Madness, is when one of the small schools make a name for themselves by going farther than anybody thought they would. And this year there's a small school in Colorado that's making some noise.
Grand Canyon University.
Yes, Grand Canyon. I wrote them up. Well, I didn't write the story. I put it up from ESPN on the 110 pages, but that's going to be interesting to watch with them. We'll see what happens with them. That's up on the 110 pages for you fans.
I think that's probably the most exciting thing about the March Madness is when you get to see guys like, schools like Fordham, Seton Hall, Grand Canyon University. When you get to see those guys who have put in the effort, they've scouted the talent, they've put out a good program, and now's their time to shine. Butler, we can use them as a reference. Also, Creighton University, they've come a long way in their basketball program over the last few years. It's good to see that these guys get a moment to shine.
No relation, I trust.
Actually, yeah, there's some deep relation, but it's not anywhere on my family. It's not close to my family tree. So,
okay. It's a good
My last name is very odd. My last name is very odd, and we come from Scotland. So every Creighton that come from Scotland is of my kinfolks. And fortunate enough, that's my kinfolks over there, but not far enough for me to receive any beneficiary out of it.
Okay. Lastly, wanted to ask, we talked about Harvick in the Cup Series and also the Xfinity Series, which I don't know how, you know, I know we've had discussions, CJ and myself, and CJ and I are in agreement. I don't think you were in as much agreement about it, but I don't see the benefit of awarding points to Xfinity drivers if the Cup drivers win all the Xfinity races. It makes the points in their division irrelevant. In any case, Harvick won both of those races, but did you happen to see the truck race?
I've watched part of the truck race. Unfortunately, I was cooking supper at the time, and Kyle Busch was running away with it, and then I looked, and when I realized that I had sat down long enough to breathe, and I seen Brett Moffitt in victory lane, and I thought, wow, Mikey was right. At the beginning of the race, he said he knows that boy can drive, and then he's in victory lane at the end of the race. Good job, Mikey.
There we go, yep. No, but it was like a last couple of laps pass, if not the last lap, and I was lucky to see it because usually it wasn't on a Friday night this week. Usually a truck race, if it's an all weekend with all three divisions running, it's usually Friday night for trucks, Saturday for Xfinity, and Sunday for Cup. And I'm not available Friday night because I have my show on Friday night, so I'm not really watching the truck race. Matter of fact, the running joke I have with people that I run the thread with on NOR is that if there's enough cautions, I'll see the end of the race because it'll be over, you know, it'll be still on after 10 o'clock. But if the race goes off without a hitch, chances are I don't get to see the truck race live. But I happened to see this because it was Saturday at 4:30 and did a nice job. And Kyle Busch is, and the minute I saw this, I said, oh, you know Kyle's going to blame his pit crew for this because there was a messed up pit stop at the end, which pushed him back into the pack and allowed Moffitt to get up there. So, you know, that was a definite problem for Kyle's pit crew. But anyway.
I love the doubleheader. I thought that was a good move. I do like watching racing under the lights, especially the trucks. I think the trucks is one of the best programs on TV, period. The truck racing is probably the better racing of any of them. And week in, week out that they race, they put on a great show. You know, it is what it is with Cup drivers racing in the lower series. But, you know, this weekend it worked out. It worked out for a good team. That was the team Ryan Truex was with last year. And he wasn't able to seal the deal. Well, Brett Moffitt stepped in the 16 truck, and he sealed the deal. And I think Moffitt has a little bit of talent there. So he may not be a Cup driver, but it's about time to see some regular Truck Series guys and some regular Xfinity guys again. For the last two or three years, we've been on this carousel of who's going to move up the ranks the fastest. And, you know, eventually these Cup rides are going to get a little bit harder to get into again. As the talent refurbishes itself at the Cup level.
Right. No, I think you know, Ryan Truex had a pretty good run in the Xfinity Series Saturday too. My problem with the Xfinity, you know, series is not the drivers that are Xfinity drivers. It's the fact that, you know, I understand Harvick won and all that, and it's only one race, and you know, but then you have Kyle Busch running some of the other ones, most of the other ones, and it's unfortunate for the young kids in Xfinity. I mean, if you talk to them, like we've talked to a few drivers on this show, CJ and myself, and they like it because they compete against the top guys, but still, 9 times out of 10, they end up winning. And when, you know,
don't you know, Stat? You think about what Ricky Bobby said. What did Ricky Bobby say? If you're not first, you're what?
Yeah, I know.
Do you really buy that these drivers come on here and say, oh, I like running second to Kyle Busch? No, they want to beat Kyle Busch.
I know. If they don't beat Kyle Busch, it's just the same old line. Right, right. No, I'm not saying they like finishing second. What I'm saying is no racing driver likes being second, okay? I always say that on my show, too, when I talk to these drivers in my successful years. I said, nobody goes in saying, okay, tonight I'll run second. But the point is they like running alongside of them. It's, you know, we've talked to them, a few of them, and my only problem with the system is that if you're going to award points, automatically if a cup driver wins in the World War II divisions, it makes those points irrelevant for that week, you know. And you get enough races where the cup drivers really say in Xfinity between Kyle Busch and Harvick or somebody else, Kozlowski, one of you, and the other one, Rainey. You know, all these guys ran Xfinity when they were up in Cup. So automatically that win makes the points irrelevant to that race because nobody gets them. And that's what's bad about the point system.
Yeah, I agree. And what team owner is going to be pissed off that a Cup driver won in their car? You know, so you can't really leave it to the team owners. But as my team, if I drove for Joe Gibbs, then I would think that my time to shine would be in the Xfinity Series, and I would have the opportunity one day to beat Kyle Busch on his own level, than to have Kyle Busch, the talented race car driver, come down and race me on my level and beat me. Because that's really where it's no contest, because the experience that these drivers have driving the cup car. Remember, we've had many car changes as well in the Xfinity Series, but it was nowhere near propaganda like the car of tomorrow, the next generation. You know, it's generation six or whatever the hell it was called at one point in time. Xfinity's changed their cars just as many times since Dale Earnhardt has died, and it's gotten nowhere near the advertisement that the Cup guys have. But the difference is there's more horsepower. The cars are set up a lot different, and so when you get that experience of running with the best of the drivers in the top league, then of course you're going to get outrun every weekend in the Xfinity Series by a Cup driver. Their experience says that they're going to beat you.
Well, and you know, that's where I think we're all in agreement. Craig is no longer in the studio, but I think we're all in agreement that the car of tomorrow was terrible. I mean, I remember that, and the mess that was too. CJ has said the same thing, so I think we're all on the same page with that.
That the car tomorrow is horrible?
Was horrible, yeah. But it gave birth to all these changes, so who knows?
It was a necessary evil, though, don't you believe?
Yeah, I guess so. in retrospect, now you see the different bodies, and I guess that started with the car tomorrow, where they, you know, where they designed how they were gonna, you know, change everything up that way. Prior to that, you didn't see.
I think that's called innovation, Mike, and we've seen a lot of it. We've seen roof flaps installed. We've seen escape hatches installed. We've seen spoilers. We've seen big spoilers. We've seen no spoilers. We've seen splitters. NASCAR's continuing to change the product to find a better race car. But when you start at scratch and you completely change the game, you know, you're going to make a pigskin the same way you're going to make a pigskin every time. But the race cars needed to be safer. There needed to be more room for the driver. And nobody will ever understand the difference in sitting in an old Buick seat or a van seat, a captain seat out of a 74 van versus these the seats that they sit in now. I mean, you know, you're sitting in a cockpit in your own seat that's strapped you. The innovation that we've had in technology is wonderful. Unfortunately, what we had was a pretty dangerous race car that wasn't as safe as what it is now. And so, yeah, it's going to take time to build that good product again, but racers have raced with downforce and they race without downforce. We've seen at the Atlanta race, cars couldn't race each other. They were spread out all along the track. To me, it was the biggest disappointment to watch Daytona and then to watch Atlanta. Because Daytona, everybody's there together. It's the last lap, and it's still anybody's chance to win. At Atlanta, it was the exact opposite. Harvick stayed out front the whole race. Everybody hit the snooze button and realized that NASCAR's only exciting when you go to the plate tracks. And that's not necessarily the truth, but they're two totally different products that we're trying to sell on the same scale. Does that make any sense?
Right.
Stats.
Yeah, it does. It does. Unfortunately, what creates the drama, though, you just mentioned it, at the play tracks is what people, and I don't like to say this for everybody, and I don't think it's true for true NASCAR fans, but what you say about casual fans, unfortunately, when they go to Daytona or Talladega, what are they looking for? If you're not a true race fan, you're looking for the big one. It's like when hockey fans used to go, you know, they used to accuse hockey fans of this. Real hockey fans, I don't think, do this. But they used to say this about hockey fans back in the day. Hockey fans go to hockey games to see the fights. I don't necessarily think that's true either. But they said the same thing about Daytona and Talladega, that people get drawn to that, and I know you go to Talladega all the time, people get drawn to Talladega and Daytona just to see who's going to be involved in the big one. I mean, they used to say that about those two races, and I don't know that that's true. I guess it's true for some people, but I don't like to think that's true of all race fans.
You haven't ever heard the old phrase, went to a fight and a race broke out?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, in the same token, there are people who enjoy the carnage stats, but I felt just as excited on that last restart at Atlanta that I did on the last restart of Daytona. There was nothing like seeing those cars three and four wide going off into the corner in the backstretch. Unfortunately, you know, aerodynamics and good car setup had a lot to do with how that track is, and the draft isn't as relevant there as what it is at Daytona, so the cars were able to spread out quicker. My suggestion is NASCAR either give it a 10-lap shootout at the end of every race, or put restrictor plates on the cars and make sure that they're all basically the same car, and talent doesn't mean anything. It's all about luck. To me, I think that's what the fans are searching for. They want to see that close action racing. I remember back years ago, yeah, half the field would be out of the race or a lap down or two laps down or three laps down. But your top eight cars were going to be battling, you know, side by side or single file, but racing each other as hard as they could up near the front. Now there's most of the time a 2.5 second differential between each position.
Yep. Yep. You don't see finishes or I remember that used to see rare finishes where, you know, two cars crossing the line and they have to do slow motion and so forth. And like you said, the one thing about like what Harvick did this weekend is, you know, he put half a lap at least on it on the closest guy, you know, with the Xfinity car too. So, you know, that's the unfortunate part is when you don't get a finish where two guys cross the line, or worse, if they cross the line and they wreck, you know, in the process.
It looked like a lot of the old racing stats with only six cars on the lead lap. Six cars were on the lead lap for most of the race. The rest of the cars were a lap down.
Yep, true.
At a mile and a half or a mile and however big Atlanta is, to be able to put that kind of distance on guys, there was a heck of a speed difference between your 12th place and your 20th place.
Yep, definitely. And that's why you don't see the guys that generally run 35th to 40th be competitive, you know. It has nothing to do with, well, I guess it does have to do with how the car is built. Everybody builds a car a different way. I mean, within the rules maybe, but, you know, that's why you see, you know, with the exception of last week, D. Benedetto running, you know, 30th to 40th every week. You know, guys like that. You don't see a Corey LaJoy up near the front ever because he's either wrecked in the back of the pack or, you know, or he's running 35th, you know.
Yep, but what's so strange to see is an enterprise like Hendrick with cars back there around those guys. It was really a sight to see three out of four Hendrick cars struggling, and you know, one of them I understand was a wreck, the other was a bad setup, and Bowman, you know. I'm concerned about Hendrick this year, but stats, I gave it a good hour there, and I got to get these youngins in bed.
All right. Thanks, Chris. And I'll definitely, if not before, I'll definitely talk to you on Thursday night.
All right, Seth. Thanks, man.
Okay. Thank you. All right. That was Chris. Going to play daddy now. But we had an interesting show. We covered a lot of sports with Chris, in addition to NASCAR, you know, interesting things coming up tomorrow. And I don't know what the situation is going to be. Earlier today, CJ had plans to spend his birthday with his kids, so he wasn't going to be on the air tomorrow night. I don't know if what happened tonight has changed his ideas any, but in any case, I will be here, and more importantly for tomorrow, as you know, Tuesday, Izzo will be here with his hockey report. A lot of things going on in the last week. It's amazing to me what goes down in the NHL, even regardless of the Olympic hockey, which this week was also very relevant. But it's interesting to me that a number of stories from the NHL hit the wires, as it were, like from Wednesday, right after Izzo is on Tuesday, and we have to hold him to the next Tuesday. But we'll be talking a lot about a lot of those stories, because there was a lot of hockey news that hit the wires from last Wednesday to what's going to turn out to be tomorrow, topped off by the trade deadline. A lot of trades made, probably more than usual in the NHL on the trade deadline or before. One that stuck out to me that we'll definitely talk about with Izzo tomorrow, in addition to what he's been able to garner and I've been able to garner throughout the week, is Rick Nash went from the Rangers to the Bruins. So, but a lot of interesting circumstances with hockey players. A lot of Senators, Ottawa Senators might be moving on, things like that. So we'll definitely talk to Izzo about that tomorrow night. Again, talk about Olympic hockey as well. So that's coming up tomorrow night. No other guests, according to Ms. Lee, as of now, unless we talk later and she advises me that there's going to be a guest or two. But as of earlier today, there wasn't. Wednesday, hopefully CJ will be back, and we will talk to Molly Hummel. I think Kelmick, that's her, how you pronounce her last name. She's been on the show before. She'll be on Wednesday at 8:05. But again, I will talk to Ms. Lee after the show and find out anything new. I have a feeling there might be a few developments. She communicated with me before I came on the show tonight, and unfortunately before CJ let me know as well that he was going to be among the missing tonight. So I did the best I could with the aid, of course, of Craig and Chris to start off, Craig and Chris to start off, and then Chris, talking with us and offering his opinions on different sports stories. That's Tuesday and Wednesday as we look ahead. Izzo tomorrow night with the Hockey Report, and then Molly Hummel on Wednesday. Thursday, as Craig and Chris already told you, Mike Perillo from their local track, from Craig's local track, and Glen Ridge Motorsports Park, and then the promoter, Mike Perillo, and then my show on Friday night, where I have two invitees and no responses as yet, but we'll work on that as hopefully by tomorrow I'll have some feedback and be able to make that announcement on the show tomorrow night as well. But I appreciate you listening in. That's about all we have today. Again, hopefully whatever held CJ up at work, I don't know whether he plans to take off tomorrow night or what the deal is. But in any case, I will be here with Izzo. That's at least two people you'll hear from tomorrow night. We appreciate you tuning in on the 110 Nation every of except Sunday for right now. There's something in the works, hopefully, for that. Worked on that today myself. Possible other show for the weekend, and we'll see what happens with that. Also working on another golf story, the latest one, which is the Honda Classic. Put that story up later tonight or early tomorrow morning. Again, as we run down the week, Izzo, myself, tomorrow night, we'll do the hockey report with Izzo. A lot of things to talk about. It transpired in the NHL, capped off in the last week, capped off with the trade deadline. So I'll be definitely perusing the NHL websites more than usual, preparing for tomorrow night's show. And so that'll be at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. Also looking forward to Wednesday at 8:05, Motley Helmuth, who has been on the show before. Thursday, Chris and Craig with their show, Race Chat Live, with Mike Perillo, the promoter, co-promoter with his partner of Glen Ridge Motorsports Park. And then Friday, another episode of Hot Laps with Stats. We hope to have two or three good guests for you. I'm working on booking them as we speak, or not as we speak, right before, and we'll see what happens with that. A possible guest as well, depending on what I find out for the show either tomorrow night or Wednesday, added to Molly. But I'll find out more about that, hopefully, as well, if the person gets back to me. Hopefully I'll be able to find that out as well. But in the meantime, I want to thank I-95 and all our sponsors, and thank them for their support, because without them, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. I want to thank the fans, of course. I know sometimes without CJ here, the show can seem to be a little bit of a seat of the pants operation, literally. If you know me, you know that's semi tongue in cheek, but it's true. When you don't have advance notice, except for 5 minutes before airtime, it's kind of difficult to make a show work. But I do the best I can, and I do appreciate your support of this show, of all our shows, specifically all during the week, and especially my show on Friday night. We do appreciate it, because without the fans, you're the reason we're here. Without the fans, we would be talking to ourselves. So we're very, very appreciative of your patronage and your listenership on a daily basis during the week. Again, I want to thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you tomorrow night with Izzo and the Hockey Report, among other things. 8 o'clock. Tune in and be here. Thank you.
thanks for listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show with Mr. CJ Sports. You are a part of the 110 Nation, so be sure to visit the 110nation.com for everything related to the show. You can follow CJ on Twitter at 110 Nation and on Facebook at 110 Nation Sports. Until next time.